From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Puerto Rican working families have been carrying the brunt of this crisis, and it is for them that we are doing this fight.
A $72 billion government debt in Puerto Rico sends residents packing for the mainland.
Imagine opening a business on an economy that hasn't grown in 8 years. It's horrible.
Today, understanding the Puerto Rican debt crisis, from the financial...
Of course, a government's going to pay you back. What could go wrong?
...to the political.
This economic crisis has made it impossible to ignore the island.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No te vayas. Hey, thanks for listening. So are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who just wishes they knew a lot more about what's out there? Well, the All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best new and upcoming music, including the Carrie Brownstein we never knew, and surprising reflections on the impact of David Bowie. Find lots of songs you'll love on All Songs Considered every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Recently, I called up Jesus Herrera. For 20 years, Jesus worked as a mechanical engineer for a construction company in San Juan, Puerto Rico. But starting in the early 2000s, construction on the island really started to slow down. Jesus's boss felt a lot of pressure.
On a Monday, he came in and said that Thursday was the last day of operations of the company. He basically wrote us a check for that week's pay, and that was it.
Unemployed and in his 40s, Jesus faced a dilemma.
Stay in Puerto Rico and it would have been very sad, or make a big leap, risk it all, and move to the mainland where there were jobs.
Can you tell me where you are right now? Like, what city are you in?
Right now, I'm in Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Jesus and his wife, Mia Monique Lora, have been in Mississippi for a little under a year, and life is different there.
Everything fried. So you get fried oysters and fried and breaded, fried okra, fried Oreos.
And that very southern word, y'all, has been really confusing.
The first time I heard like, oh, y'all walk to the room and stuff like that. And I was like, you where? Like what? You don't know if she was talking to me or to the whole group.
But the biggest difference so far has actually been Jesus's job.
I came from working in a small company where I knew everybody, where, you know, I was in charge, to be a laborer.
Jesus found a job as a pipe fitter at a company building ships for the U.S. Navy. It was hard, manual labor that he wasn't used to. But luckily for him, he's been promoted and is now working as a mechanical engineer at Ingalls Shipbuilding. He and his wife, Mia, plan to stay in the South. They realize there just isn't a future for them in Puerto Rico.
I love where I'm living right now. I have to admit I have fallen in love with the South, but maybe the fact that I left the island made me love it even more because I miss it a lot.
Jesus and Mia's story isn't unique. When Jesus decided to leave the island, he contacted a local moving company.
I called and they said, oh, no, we can't do it for several months. I'm like, but I need this next week. And they said, we have a 3, 4, and 5 month waiting period because we have such a large volume that we won't even be able to go pick it up. I was like, what are you talking about?
Every week, about 1,000 Puerto Ricans, yes, 1,000, are choosing to leave the island and live somewhere else. It all comes down to something you might have heard about.
Times are hard for Puerto Rico.
Thousands of businesses have closed, hollowing out entire neighborhoods.
Educated Puerto Ricans are leaving the island in droves.
On today's show, we're going to unpack the Puerto Rican debt crisis, why it happened, how it's affecting Puerto Ricans today, and what it means for the island's future. Co-hosting with me today is our very own Julio Ricardo Varela, who is one of our resident Boricuas at Latino USA. Hey, Julio.
Hey, Maria.
All right, so start us off with some context.
All right, so here are the basics. Puerto Rico is an American territory. The 3.5 million people that live on the island are all U.S. citizens. And over the last 10 years, the government's debt has grown to $72 billion. That's billion with a B.
The Puerto Rican debt has been in the news a lot lately. But for those who aren't deep into the world of finance, it can all be a little abstract. So, Julio, break down that debt for us.
The story of the debt crisis, in a way, starts with people like Teresa Garcia.
I live in Guaynabo, Puerto Rico.
And Mel Fetter.
Married, 3 kids, 4 grandchildren.
Teresa's from Puerto Rico, Mel is from Long Island, both retired. They don't know each other, but they have something in common.
I invested in the Puerto Rico bonds.
I would say that about 60% of my entire saving was on Puerto Rican bonds.
They invested in Puerto Rican bonds in part because they were totally tax-free no matter where you lived in the country. All was going fine, and then one day, Mel got a call.
You know, I remember that call. We were on our anniversary. We were going out to the city, and I came home, and I got this voicemail.
It was from his financial advisor saying, I don't want you to freak out, but just so you know, there might be a problem with some of those Puerto Rican bonds.
About 7 months ago, I got another letter from the company and saying, you know, Puerto Rican bonds are a little bit iffy, for lack of another word.
The bonds that Mel and Teresa bought had tanked in value. Some were trading as low as 30 cents on the dollar. That was really bad news for them. So how much have you bought? How much do you own in Puerto Rican bonds?
About $500,000.
$500,000.
Yeah, and I have lost almost half of it. I feel very worried. I feel insecure. I worked all my life. I worked hard. I thought that my future was safe, and I see all this going down the drain.
I didn't know that things were going to happen like this.
Uncertainty. That's what a lot of people in Puerto Rico are feeling now. Mel and Teresa's financial advisors told them Puerto Rican bonds were safe, and then they weren't. To help us understand why, we called up our friends at NPR's Planet Money to explain the fun-filled world of bonds.
A lot of people talk about stocks, but I'm a bonds man.
This is Robert Smith from NPR's Planet Money. So this is the question I have to ask you, Robert. What is a bond, and why would people like Mel and Teresa buy a bond in the first place?
You know, a country or a state or a city, they're just like you and I. If they want to buy something big, they want to buy a house or a car in our case, or in their case, you know, build a power plant or pave new roads, they borrow money. And the thing a government borrows money from is the people. It issues a bond, an IOU, to the people, and the people are like, here, take my money, pay me some interest. And the reason why Mel and Teresa would buy them is that they are so boring, so dull, but so reliable. And if you're a retiree, you don't want to be in the stock market. It's up and down and up and down. You want something that is just going to pay you a little bit of money day in and day out. And so most retirees go into bonds. They lend money to a government because, of course, a government's going to pay you back. What could go wrong?
But why did Mel and Teresa's bonds lose value?
Well, because a bond is only as good as the promise that someone's going to pay it back. And most countries have no problem with this because they can raise taxes, they have their own currency. But Puerto Rico is just in this weird situation being a territory. And they've sort of publicly started to say, after a decade of financial problems, we may not be able to pay this back. And the moment you say, we may not be able to pay it back, That is when nobody wants Puerto Rican bonds. And so in order, if you wanted to sell them, if you wanted to get out of them, if you wanted to have a safe, boring retirement again, nobody's going to buy them. You're going to have to lower the price, lower and lower.
So the bonds are losing value, right? But now you have these other investors that are buying these bonds on the cheap, the so-called vulture funds. If the bonds are no longer safe investments, why are these firms buying them?
Because these people are not retirees. They don't want a safe, boring investment. They want to make a ton of money. So once the Puerto Rican bonds become high risk, they also become high reward, right? A bond fund can walk in and say to Mel or Teresa, hey, listen, I'm going to take those off your hand for 40 cents on the dollar, 30 cents on the dollar, 20 cents on the dollar. And, you know, Mel's panicked. He takes the money. Fine. Now, if they can get Puerto Rico to pay that money back in full, they have quadrupled, you know, quintupled their money overnight just by doing that.
How do they get the Puerto Rican government to pay them? And you say there's a big return here. How does that all happen?
Well, I mean, one thing they have is they have power. And what they can do is hire a lot of lawyers. They can take Puerto Rico to court, and a judge can demand that Puerto Rico, say, fire some police officers and send that money, you know, to the vulture funds.
So the government has a big payment due, I believe, in May. And a lot of people are saying that the government's not going to be able to pay for it. What do you think is going to happen next?
You can put off debt payments by shuffling money around for a long time. And a lot of the people you owe money to will wait. There's only so long you can delay it. At some point, everyone goes to the courts and to their lawyers, and that's when the mess starts.
After talking to Robert Smith, I also spoke with an economist from the University of Puerto Rico,
Dr. Rosario Rivera.
And she told me that in her view, what happened is that Puerto Rican bonds were just too good of a deal.
The fact is that they were having a party at our expense.
It was a party because, number one, Puerto Rican bonds were totally tax-free. And number two,
what they were saying to us is, I don't care if your economy is going to fail. I know you're going to pay me because that's in the Constitution.
There's an unusual clause in the island's constitution that Puerto Rico's government has to pay its debt before it pays for anything else, like education or healthcare. So investors thought, I'll get my money back no matter what. And because the bonds looked like such a sweet deal, Puerto Rico was able to borrow more money than it should have been able to because its economy had been falling apart for at least a decade.
The government had a party also, just issuing debt irresponsibly with no economic positive economic repercussions. So they were two irresponsible parties here.
Now, one-third of all taxes collected in Puerto Rico are spent on paying off debt. To avoid cutting services, the government has jacked up the sales tax and utility bills. Water and electricity have doubled in the last few years. With no jobs anywhere and a skyrocketing cost of living, people leave. And that gets the island into what Professor Hector Cordero Guzman at Baruch College calls a death spiral.
Not enough people to pay taxes, not enough tax collection, not enough money to pay the debt, not enough money to pay for social services, which makes life for people more difficult, which means that more people leave, which means that the government has even less money.
What that means is that every part of the crisis actually makes every other part of the crisis worse.
Exactly. And to top it off, the American vulture funds that own much of the debt will now go to court and try to force Puerto Rico to pay up every last cent with money that the island doesn't have any way of getting. But here's the kicker. If this was any U.S. city or state, Puerto Rico would file for bankruptcy. A judge would look at the books and figure out how much Puerto Rico can afford to pay and over what time period and make a deal that everybody can live with.
But Puerto Rico cannot declare bankruptcy.
Exactly, because it's a territory. Puerto Rico doesn't have access to bankruptcy protection. And since it's not a country, it can't go to the IMF. It's stuck in limbo. And so the debt spiral continues.
Coming up on Latino USA, a little Puerto Rican history 101. And what's next for the island? Stay with us. No te vayas.
Oye, esto va dedicado a todos los barrios de Puerto Rico.
Trujillo.
Dedicado al barrio de La Perla. Y tú, ¿Qué están mirando?
Yo tengo actitud desde los 5 años. Mi mai me la creó con tapaboca y regaño. Desde chiquito canito con el pelo castaño. Soy la oveja negra de todo el rebaño. Y fui creciendo poquito a poco. Brincando de techo en techo, tumbando coco. Y aunque casi me mato y casi me escocoto, nunca me vieron llorando ni botando moco.
Allá abajo en el hueco, en el boquete, nacen flores por ramillete. Casita de colores con la ventana abierta, vecina de la playa, puerta con puerta. Aquí yo tengo de todo, no me falta nada. Tengo la noche que me sirve de sábana.
Tengo los mejores paisajes del cielo. Tengo una neverita repleta de cerveza con hielo. Un arco iris con sabor a piragua. Gente bonita rodeada por agua.
Before we get back to our show, can I ask you a favor? If you go to iTunes and rate and review Latino USA, it really helps new listeners to find us. And your comments, they really inspire us. So, gracias. In fact, recently, new monthly sustaining donor Nancy wrote to say that our show has inspired her to pursue a career in social work for Spanish-speaking populations in the United States. She said, "I've learned so much, and your show has made Fridays my favorite day of the week." Thank you, Nancy. I hope your senior year is a great one, too. And if you can, I hope you'll join Nancy and other amazing listeners just like her who have gone to latinousa.org and clicked on the donate button. Every single penny helps our independent media nonprofit company. Muchas gracias.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And from the Walton Family Foundation, working to prepare all students for a lifetime of opportunity by ensuring access to high-quality K-12 choices. More information is available at waltonk12.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. Today we've been talking about Puerto Rico's debt crisis. But the truth is, the debt in Puerto Rico did not appear out of thin air. It was a long time coming.
And the story of how Puerto Rico's economy got to where it is today goes back, way back to 1898. When the island became a possession of the United States following the Spanish-American War. Juan González joins me now to talk about the long and strange relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. Juan is a columnist at the New York Daily News, as well as the co-host of the radio and TV program Democracy Now! Welcome back to Latino USA.
Oh, thank you, Maria. It's my pleasure to be here.
What is the root of the current crisis in Puerto Rico, from your view?
The current financial crisis stems from an economic stagnation that the island has been undergoing now for more than 3 decades. And that is really a result of this peculiar relationship. The other states can invoke bankruptcy protection for their cities, but not Puerto Rico. And I think that you have to deal with the reality that Puerto Rico has been a territorial possession. The rest of the world calls that a colony. The first half of the 20th century, the island was basically used as a producer of resources, of raw materials, specifically sugar. And for the first 50 years, the island's economy was basically a monocrop economy of about 4 or 5 American sugar companies that exploited the Puerto Rican labor force at incredibly low wages.
Groves of bamboo like regal ostrich plumes dot the island. Sugarcane, backbone of the island's economy.
And around 1950, something happened in Puerto Rico called Operation Bootstrap. So what exactly was Operation Bootstrap?
Operation Bootstrap was the name for the model to industrialize the island, increase the wages of the agricultural workers by turning them into factory workers, but also to promote mass migration. Basically to get more and more Puerto Ricans to leave the island, go to the United States and work in the farms of South Jersey or Connecticut or Ohio.
When you talk about Puerto Rico and you're moving into modern history, a number that comes up is something called 936. It's the name of a part of the tax code that gave big breaks to U.S. companies who set up shop in Puerto Rico starting in 1976. What does that have to do with where we are now?
Well, 936 became the tax exemption on steroids, basically, for American companies. Puerto Rico became a gold mine for pharmaceutical and medical equipment companies, and that became the basis of the rising Puerto Rican working class that became the showcase of the Caribbean throughout Latin America.
Homes for everybody. Housing gets top priority in Puerto Rico's booming economy.
All of these pharmaceutical companies were making huge, huge profits off the labor of Puerto Rican workers and the combination of this Section 936 tax exemption.
And then 936 gets scrapped. Why does 936 get scrapped?
In 1996, President Clinton was seeking re-election, and he wanted to increase the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage across the United States.
And American workers should get their raise as soon as possible.
The House of Representatives was under the control of Newt Gingrich and the Republicans. The deal that Clinton made with Newt Gingrich was that he would get rid of the Section 936 tax exemption for Puerto Rico, which was about $7 billion, and transfer that into this tax credit for American businesses. So Gingrich and Clinton cut the deal in 1996. And as soon as that happened, in 2006, the pharmaceutical companies left the island, and you can precisely date this mushrooming debt of Puerto Rico. It's doubled between 2006 and 2016.
Para componer un song, se necesita un motivo.
Certain things have to be understood by both sides in this crisis. Puerto Rico is currently a colonial territory of the United States, but it is a separate nation. The people have a different language, they have a different history, they have a different culture than the rest of the United States. And unlike all the other territories of the United States that eventually became states, Hawaii, New Mexico, Arizona, by the time those territories were granted statehood, a majority or a plurality of the residents of those territories were Anglo-Americans. Americans never settled Puerto Rico.
Big picture, Juan, why does the United States continue in this relationship with Puerto Rico? What is the reasoning behind not changing things in terms of the status?
The United States no longer needs Puerto Rico for the things it originally acquired it for. It no longer needs it for military bases, which was a big deal during the Cold War. There were many military bases. Most of the military bases have left the island. It no longer needs it for cheap labor because it can get cheaper labor. Our companies can get cheaper labor in Bangladesh and Vietnam and in Mexico, lots of other places. You know, I use the analogy, it's easy to get married, it's hard to get divorced. You know, and when you no longer need a territory of 3.5 million people, but they are now U.S. citizens. What do you do with it?
Juan Gonzalez, thank you so much for speaking with us on Latino USA.
Thank you.
Democracy Now! Co-host and New York Daily News columnist Juan Gonzalez.
Para componer un son, se necesita un
motivo. Julio, let's talk about how this crisis is actually affecting average Puerto Ricans right now.
The Puerto Rican government needs money somehow, so it's been trying different things. For example, the last governor, Luis Fortuño, laid off 30,000 public employees. The current administration under Alejandro García Padilla has gone the other route, and his administration mostly avoided cutting services by raising taxes.
But one place Governor García Padilla has cut is education. Joy Diaz from member station KUT in Austin, Texas, has the story.
This is the Children's Museum in Carolina, Puerto Rico. The music is blasting, but the place is almost deserted. There seem to be more attendants than kids here.
Everybody is practically packing up and leaving because there's no jobs here.
Inez Delgado brought her two young children to the museum, a treat at $5 per person. The exodus includes her own family.
And I have my sisters. One is a doctor, the other one is an engineer. And they moved to the States because here they couldn't get the same jobs that they're getting over there.
And with the grown-ups go the children.
As the Puerto Rican government is desperate for cash flow, it's been looking for places to make cuts. One of the hardest hit areas is education. Over the last couple of years, the Puerto Rico Department of Education has had to rejigger its whole public school system. Some campuses were consolidated, some were restructured. 200 schools, close to 15%, were closed. The move has saved $240 million, but that's just a drop in the bucket compared to the island's debt of $73 billion.
Y cuando me preguntan, ¿y qué se ha hecho con esos ahorros? Pues mira, realmente...
That is Puerto Rico's Secretary of Education, Rafael Román Meléndez. He says when people ask him what he's done with the money, the answer is nothing.
Terminar en déficit operacional como pasaba con el departamento por muchos años.
What we've done is cut expenses instead of going deeper into debt like we did in the past, he says. Now at some schools, kids from kindergarten through eighth grade are lumped together. The cuts have left some parents unhappy. At a plaza in San Juan, some people play dominoes under the shade of ancient trees. Others dance. Aida Martinez is here with her family celebrating a birthday. She's the mother of a 10-year-old daughter whose school was consolidated.
O sea, para mí yo creo que es el error más grande que hacen porque van a estar con otros niños de más madurez, o sea, tienen más madurez.
This is the biggest mistake they've ever made, she says. Older kids and younger kids in the same building. Older kids are more mature, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing. People are upset everywhere I go, even shopping at the mall. Zuleika Rodriguez has a son with a severe skin condition that requires him to have tutoring at home. But the government has changed the rules for providing special ed. Now, all parents have to prove that their kids need it.
Yo voy a pelear hasta lo último, pero entonces la última manera sería emigrar a los Estados Unidos.
I'm going to fight the Department of Education until the end, she says. But if I can't get services for my son, then I'll move to the United States because I not only need to survive, I need to find ways for my kids to thrive. The situation is not just tough on parents. For teachers, there's a push out of Puerto Rico and a pull into the States. In Puerto Rico, teachers can go months without pay, and their pensions have virtually disappeared, used by the government for cash flow. But on the mainland, school districts from Florida to Alabama to Texas desperately need them. Just as baseball teams recruit from places like the Dominican Republic, recruiters in Texas fly to Puerto Rico every year and hire a bunch of teachers.
¿Quién desayuna hoy?
Jason Torres is from Mayagüez, Puerto Rico. He's 36, and he's a new bilingual teacher in the small town of Maynard, Texas. He loves bringing music into his classroom.
Majority of my kids are mostly born here from Mexican parents, and I've learned so much. I try to bring things from their culture into the classroom, too.
Jason arrived in Texas with $500, one bag of clothes, and his guitar. He felt pretty lonely. That is until Christmas rolled around and he was invited to a party. There were more than 400 people there.
No todos puertorriqueños, pero la gran mayoría.
Not everyone was from Puerto Rico, he says, but the majority were. Jason says he misses his family and friends back home, but he's not planning to go back anytime soon. With education budgets falling and further cuts possible, it just doesn't make sense for somebody looking for a teaching job.
Las condiciones de vida son mejores acá, lamentablemente hay que aceptar eso.
Life is better here, he says. It hurts to say that, but it's true.
Tiene unos bigotes. En inglés es catfish. Cat, gato, fish, pez.
Reporter Joy Diaz from KUT in Austin, Texas, with that piece. 9,000 teachers like Jason left Puerto Rico in 2014. But the hedge funds that own much of Puerto Rico's debt say the island is still overspending on education, even though Puerto Rico spends less per student than any U.S. state.
And it's important to note that the school closings have been rough, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg.
The government hasn't made truly big cuts yet, so we've really only seen the beginning of a potential humanitarian crisis on the island. For example, if healthcare or pensions or other services get slashed.
And whether or not that scenario plays out has a lot to do with what happens in Washington, D.C.
Our producer, Marlon Bishop, went to Capitol Hill recently to find out what the mood in Congress is.
Yeah, I visited D.C. for an event called the Day of Action for Puerto Rico. The rally was in a big meeting room packed with Democratic members of the House and the Senate. There were union leaders, activists, all sorts of people lobbying on behalf of Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rican working families have been carrying the brunt of this crisis, and it is for them that we are doing this fight.
We see Wall Street being bailed out, AIG being bailed out.
This is Juan Cartagena. He's one of the speakers. He's from an advocacy organization called Latino Justice. And I spoke to him after the rally.
And Puerto Rico's not even asking for a bailout. All it's asking for is a structure to allow it to pay off its debt.
The main thing the people in the room were asking for is pretty simple, for Congress to grant Puerto Rico the right to declare bankruptcy, which would mean Puerto Rico could go to a court and work out an orderly way to deal with all these different funds and people it owes money to.
Why can't Puerto Rico declare bankruptcy?
It's kind of a mystery. I mean, they used to be able to, but when U.S. bankruptcy code was changed in 1984, Puerto Rico was left out. I talked to Pedro Pierluisi. He's Puerto Rico's lone non-voting representative in the House, and for him, it comes back to Puerto Rico's political status.
As a territory, Puerto Rico lacks any meaningful participation in the democratic process of the U.S. It's hard to move our agenda. We become like an afterthought.
Speaking of afterthoughts, Pierluisi's suite is hidden away on the top floor of the House of Representatives office building, in this far corner at the very end of the hall. And of all the congressional offices I visited, it was the most pleasant. The staff was super nice, and they were the only people to serve me coffee. Pierluisi belongs to the pro-statehood party in Puerto Rico. He's a statehooder, as they say. And he believes if the island was a state with two senators and five or so representatives in Congress to fight on its behalf, it wouldn't be in such a powerless situation.
Just because we're a territory, we were left out. It's not sensical. It's why not?
So from what you saw, did it seem like Congress might act on this?
Well, the White House and Democrats are asking for bankruptcy, plus some kind of stimulus for Puerto Rico. But Republicans are not in favor of that, and neither is the financial industry. Here's a clip of Stephen Spencer, who works for Houlihan Lokey, it's a financial company, testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the issue of Puerto Rican bonds.
Giving Chapter 9 to Puerto Rico would impose a bailout on the backs of millions of retail investors, violate the sanctity of contract, undermine the rule of law, and harm the Commonwealth and municipal debt markets throughout the country.
Instead of bankruptcy, the GOP supports a financial control board for the island, basically a group of people appointed to run the island's finances. Pierluisi is really not into that idea.
If you deprive Puerto Rico of the power to elect its government officials in a meaningful way, meaning that they will be running our government, then you eliminate the only democracy we currently have. As I see it, that would be a blatant exercise of colonialism.
The idea behind a financial control board is that Puerto Rico's leaders have been borrowing and spending irresponsibly for decades, and almost everyone agrees on that. But the people against the board worry that a bunch of American banker types would just take over, and they wouldn't necessarily have the interests of Puerto Ricans at heart. Now, House Republicans say they will bring a plan to the floor by the end of March, and it seems possible that a compromise will be reached, including some kind of restructuring and some kind of control board.
And of course, there's another dynamic in this entire story, a little thing called the 2016 election.
Yeah, that little thing. So I spoke to Congressman Luis Gutierrez, a Democrat from Chicago, and he told me it's up to the Puerto Ricans here on the mainland to make something happen.
A little over 925,000 of them live in one state. A very important state as to who determines who president of the United States is. Everybody remember 2000? I went to bed and Al Gore was president. I woke up around 4:30 to get a glass of water, and Bush was president. It was about Florida.
You know, it's interesting because we are used to talking about Cuban Americans, who historically lean right, as the political kingmakers of Florida. But that's changed more and more because Puerto Ricans have been moving to Central Florida, and they're very much swing voters.
So a lot of people say, well, just, you know, people in Puerto Rico are just going to have to suck it up and suffer. No, they're not. They're getting on a plane for $59.95 and going straight to Florida, right, where they're going to sign up.
So people like Gutierrez say that what the U.S. does for Puerto Rico, or fails to do, could actually influence the 2016 election. Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah has even gone so far as to accuse Democrats of basically twiddling their thumbs on Puerto Rico so that the crisis will get worse and more potential voters will move to Florida. It's kind of an out there accusation, but it gives you a sense of how the kind of partisan politics on this are playing out. Congress, as you may have noticed, hasn't been doing a lot of compromising lately, and it seems that on this issue, it really might. Perhaps that's about them agreeing on not wanting a humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. But I think that neither party wants to be blamed for failing to help out Puerto Rico when Election Day rolls around.
So I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about Puerto Rico in the months to come. And coming up on Latino USA, one prescription for the Puerto Rican economy.
When people feel comfortable, guess what? They buy more. They'll spend more money. So, I mean, it's like obvious math. One and one is two.
Math lessons and more. Stay with us. No te vayas. Thanks for listening. So are you a music nerd or a fledgling music nerd who just wishes they knew a lot more about what's out there? Well, the All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music is here to help. All Songs Considered is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best new and upcoming music, including the Carrie Brownstein we never knew, and surprising reflections on the impact of David Bowie. Find lots of songs you'll love on All Songs Considered every Tuesday at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Baby, go Ruby. Ay. Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. And when you put your arms around me, I get the fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. Ay. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight. Everybody got the fever, that is something you all know. Tener fiebre no es de ahora, hace mucho tiempo que empezó. You give me fever, ay. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, whose National Hispanic Advisory Council is devoted to educating the Hispanic community about the causes, treatment, and prevention of cancer. Learn more at cancercenter.com. And from American Jewish World Service, working for 30 years to end poverty and advance human rights worldwide. Learn more at ajws.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Today, the Puerto Rican debt crisis, its causes, and its solutions. The pharmaceutical industry has mostly picked up and left the island. And now one of the sectors that Puerto Rico is trying to grow is tourism. In the past, it's been hard for Puerto Rico to compete with other, less expensive Caribbean islands, like the Dominican Republic or Jamaica. But there's one group, at least, with whom Puerto Rico seems to have a competitive edge. Here's reporter Katie Manning.
Lee Hall sips a margarita in front of some bright magenta hibiscus flowers. He's at the breezy pool bar of the Condado Vanderbilt, a resort in San Juan's swankiest neighborhood. It's an upscale area that attracts many tourists, including gay tourists. But Lee says he feels welcome everywhere in Puerto Rico.
Everyone here that I've experienced is very gay-friendly, gay-accepting.
Last year, Lee and his boyfriend of 13 years flew to San Juan for a vacation.
We were walking through Old San Juan, and we walked into a jewelry store, and he said, I'm buying you a ring today. We're getting engaged. And I was like, no, we're here to see the sights. We're here to, you know, just relax. And he said, let's buy a ring.
That engagement story isn't likely to happen everywhere in the Caribbean. According to human rights groups, being gay is illegal in almost all Caribbean countries that are part of the British Commonwealth, In Dominica, anyone committing a, quote, gross indecency can get 5 years in prison or even land in a mental asylum. In Jamaica, it's punishable with 10 years in prison plus hard labor. In Barbados, it will get you life in prison.
Part of the reason that other parts of the Caribbean are so homophobic have to do with the legacy of British imperialism in the Caribbean.
That's Lawrence LaFontaine Stokes, a professor at the University of Michigan. He says that the British brought a conservative evangelical movement with them to the islands, starting in the 1600s.
And how those nations, once they achieved independence, simply maintained, and in some cases intensified, the types of repression that characterized British rule in those islands.
Puerto Rico never was a British territory. It's been part of the U.S. for over 100 years. That means the same laws that protect gay rights in the U.S. also apply to Puerto Rico. But like the U.S., the island has still struggled with acceptance. Puerto Rico wasn't as gay-friendly back in the 90s when Jaime Santana was a teenager. Now he's 37.
Now you can scream it from the top of your lungs and people will applaud it, but it used to be very different when I was growing up.
Jaime says the gay community in San Juan used to be quieter and kept to itself. But he says being gay then was still easier in Puerto Rico than it is now in other nearby islands.
I went to San Lucia by itself. It's a beautiful place, but it's illegal to be gay. That's what the law says there. You cannot say you're gay. And actually, one of the people I met got killed. And when I asked some of the other friends he had, they told me, you know what? We know why it happened, but they won't do anything.
Jaime says in St. Lucia, gay people have to meet up secretly and only in their homes. Gay tourists usually avoid the island altogether. Jaime wouldn't want Puerto Rico to head in that direction. So he started volunteering at an LGBTQ community center and organizing a yearly gay pride parade in San Juan. LGBTQ activist Cecilia de la Luz has fought for gay rights for almost 40 years.
When I identified myself as a lesbian woman, there were no community-based organizations, you know, towards fighting for our rights. It was different. When I say I was open, it doesn't mean that I could kiss my friend in front of everybody, okay? You have to take chances and work towards visibility.
She advocates for policy change, like adoption rights for gay couples, and allowing trans people to legally change their gender. She says all this is in Puerto Rico's best interest, not just the gay communities.
There's a connection between more rights for gay people in Puerto Rico and have more impact of in regards to gay tourism here in the island. And that would have a domino effect, again, regarding, economy, to improve the economy.
90% of tourists here come from the U.S., where gay marriage was legalized. And according to the U.N. World Tourism Organization, gay honeymooners spend more on average than straight couples.
Puerto Rico is open to everybody, but certainly Puerto Rico is a very gay-friendly island.
That's Ingrid Rivera. She's the executive director of the Puerto Rico Tourism Company, sponsored by the government.
They do the honeymoon or they do the party, the events, they do them in Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico is a great wedding destination.
The Puerto Rican government has encouraged airlines to create more direct flights from the U.S. It's also increased docking space for cruise ships, as gay cruises are growing in popularity. It's sponsored gay tours to Puerto Rico for the first time this year. It's even tried gay-friendly commercials.
Live your own five-star vacation story. Come to Puerto Rico, the all-star island.
And our ad sort of depicts, you know, the excitement about the bioluminescent bay and the very hip hotel. It has a very gay-friendly feel also.
There are no hard figures about what the gay tourism industry is worth, but Ingrid estimates it's somewhere between $350 and $500 million. Just outside the tourism ministry, there's a pop-up market next to a cruise ship dock. Tourists rifle through trinkets, sea glass jewelry, leather keychains. But the most popular shop, by far, sells rainbow T-shirts.
No, I wash these things in hot water.
The owner, Valkyrie Ishakwa, bats her metallic blue eyelashes at a customer. She's sold her goods on other Caribbean islands, but here, she's killing it. Today, she probably made about $300 in half an hour. Valkyrie says she's glad the Puerto Rican government has been encouraging more gay tourism.
When people feel comfortable, guess what? They buy more. They'll spend more money. So, I mean, it's like, you know, obvious math. One and one is two, you know? It's like common sense for the economy.
All right, then I have something over here. It's too early to tell exactly how much gay tourism will help Puerto Rico. But what's already clear is that more gay tourists come here than to other Caribbean islands. So its gay-friendly attitude is already paying off.
Reporter Katie Manning with that story on one creative way to bring money into the Puerto Rico economy. Even with those kinds of fresh ideas, it's still really hard for young Puerto Ricans to be optimistic these days.
It's true. Imagine every day you opened up the paper in Puerto Rico and it's just article after article after article of your island falling apart.
So a lot of people are deciding to pick up and leave, but not everybody. Reporter Andrea González Ramírez brings us this story of young Boricuas, young Puerto Ricans, who are not only staying, but they're digging in and opening new businesses.
Like so many young Puerto Ricanos, Moises Cruz left the island and went to New York. But unlike them, he came back after a couple of months. Now, he works in a tiny office in the city of Caguas. It isn't your typical business. Moises shares a couple of beers with his team during the workday, and there's always music playing. All the employees are under the age of 30. And their goal isn't typical either. In the long run, says Moises, we want to become the top creative agency on the island. We're trying to help the city and Puerto Rico. His mission is to get people to buy more local products, like choosing Vaca Negra cheese instead of Borden's. It's all Boricua down to the agency's name, Mamposteao, after that delicious, sloppy traditional dish of rice and beans. Despite the crisis, the company is making a profit. Moises says this is his granito de arena, his little grain of sand to help Puerto Rico. As young people, it's good that we're staying on the island, he says. Everything we do keeps the money here. Moises is just one of a new wave of Puerto Ricans who have stayed put. In August 2014, in the face of the crisis, the government passed a new law designed to help young entrepreneurs open a business. According to government data, over 100 new companies have been certified since then. But Alan Taveras didn't wait. He stepped up to the challenge even before the law existed. We talk over coffee, Puerto Rican coffee.
So basically, the young and the fool, as they say. Definitely it's not a wise business decision.
Why not? Well, Alan and his brother started their business in early 2014, when Puerto Rican municipal bonds were downgraded to junk status, and the severity of the crisis was just starting to be felt.
Now imagine opening a business on an economy that hasn't grown in 8 years. It's horrible.
But Alan focused on the possibilities. He and his brother created Brands of Puerto Rico, an online store that plays up the nostalgia market for the 5 million Boricuas living stateside. He pulls out his iPad and shows me their website.
We have from mosquito repellent, totally organic. We have soaps, we have coffee, we have sofrito, pique, we have art books. We even have a skateboard. We have clothes. We have everything.
Alan says he's here to stay.
Because we feel very passionate about Puerto Rico.
Alan was raised in a political household. His mother was active in the island's pro-independence party. His Dominican father worked as a consul in Puerto Rico.
Like, I grew up admiring these two people that actually gave their life for their country. So basically it comes natural to me.
The Taveras brothers took a risk and it's paid off. Later this year, they'll expand to working with local businesses in Argentina, Nicaragua, and the Dominican Republic. Alan says it's important for Puerto Ricans to see the island's economic situation as an opportunity and not a crisis.
In the next 5 years, I would love to see a Puerto Rico that believes in itself and its potential and its talent.
Natalia Figueroa is a believer. The Coquís sing outside Natalia's bedroom in the city of Guaynabo. A year ago, she launched Aguja Local, an effort to help local designers sell their clothes online.
I manage the designers. I have to contact them. I have to choose their clothing. I have to sell the clothing. I have to take photos.
She already has a full-time consulting job, and she's getting her MBA. But she's still making time for this.
I have to take charge of everything, but I love it.
Natalia explains it to me in Spanish.
Yo creo que esto es lo que va a sacar la economía del hoyo que está, entrepreneurship.
I believe this is what will get the economy out of its hole. Entrepreneurship, she says. That young people want to be entrepreneurs is what will help.
Somos la esperanza, entiendo yo.
We are the hope.
Thanks to Andrea González Ramírez for that story. And the next generation is indeed the hope. And it's not just about the economy in Puerto Rico. It's actually the hope to resolve Puerto Rico's political status issue as well. Right, Julio?
Yeah. One thing that's been really, really interesting about the crisis is that it's truly reignited the conversation on the status question. What should happen to Puerto Rico in terms of statehood or independence? A lot of people are realizing that Puerto Rico's status as a territory slash colony has a lot to do with the current economic mess it's in and its struggle to get out of it. For example, here's what Professor Hector Cordero Guzman, who we heard earlier in the show, had to say.
It doesn't make the U.S. look good to have 3.5 million of its citizens living in a place where they don't have any direct representation in Congress and when they can't vote for their president. For the world's most visible democracy, to have a big segment of its population under those conditions is embarrassing, and I think the U.S. recognizes that. This economic crisis is having the effect of creating a kind of a political moment where both the U.S. and Puerto Rico and the people in the U.S. and the people of Puerto Rico are going to have to sit and really be clear about where they see this relationship moving forward.
You know, there have been so many referendums, non-binding plebiscites, and I really think that this is going to finally put a decision on where Puerto Rico goes next in the 21st century. I have no doubt about this. The level of engagement, the level of interest, the fact that it's being talked about, the young people of the island, they don't want the status quo anymore. I am so optimistic about where this is going to go next.
Wow. Well, we'll have to wait and see and watch. Thanks a lot, Julio.
Como siempre, Maria. Gracias.
Julio Ricardo Varela. And that's it for our show today. Latino USA is produced by Marlon Bishop, Daisy Rosario, Lita Hartman, Fernanda Chavarri, Michael Simon Johnson, Antonia Cerejido, Sarah Barrett, and Sakia Gibbons. Julia Shu is our production assistant. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music editor. John Guardo is our office coordinator. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And I'll see you on my Instagram. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
And he's now working as a mechanical engineer at Ingalls Shep.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org. And from Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail, supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org. This is NPR.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, to get a marriage visa, you need to pass what's called a marriage fraud interview.
They're not supposed to ask questions about things that would be make the person uncomfortable, like what color are your sheets. But they can ask, you know, what color are the walls in the bathroom? They can ask how you met.
Do you know what color your partner's toothbrush is? Next time on Latino USA.